Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, May 18th, 2015. It's 9 a.m. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. Would you please rise and join me in a pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nutz.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nabil.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley is excused.
Thank you. First item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of the May 5th City Council meeting and the May 12th City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, proclamation recognizing May as Civility Month. Mr. DiLorenzo.
I guess every 11 months it's okay to be hateful.
Welcome to Civility Month.
Thank you very much. I'll do my best. No promises.
Whereas the open exchange of public disclosure. Public discourse is essential to the democratic system of government, and whereas, as a cornerstone of democracy, Americans observe certain rules of behavior generally known as civility, and whereas civility, derived from the Latin words civitas, meaning city, and civis, meaning citizen, is behavior worthy of citizens living in a community or common with others, and whereas displays of anger, rudeness, ridicule, impatience, and a lack of respect and personal attacks detract from the open exchange of ideas, prevent fair discussion of the issues, and can discourage individuals from participation in government, and whereas civility can assist in reaching consensus on diverse issues and allow for mutually respectful ongoing relationships, and whereas civility can uplift our daily life and make it more pleasant to live in an organized society, and whereas the city, county, and local government law section of the Florida Bar urges the adoption of a pledge of civility by all citizens in the state of Florida. Whereas, by the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, that the month of May is proclaimed as Civility Month, and that it calls upon all its citizens to exercise civility towards each other, signed this 19th day of May, 2015, Mayor John Nutz.
Thanks, sir.
You have something to say?
I'll one little comment. We do this every year, and we do it in a lot of the cities that I work with, and this is so important. I was talking with Councilmember Nabil beforehand, and I do want to share with the rest of the council and the citizens that are here today and listening. One thing that I was told by an older attorney a long time ago, when I was a young attorney, that was a long time ago, that local government is like sausage. Watching it being made is not always pleasant, but it really tastes good when it's done. And this process is not often neat and sometimes can be a little unpleasant, but I'm very proud to be part of this process in local government. I've been in it for 3 decades, and I've enjoyed it greatly, and it's been a wonderful profession for me. So I did want to add that. And thank you for allowing me to be part of the City of Palm Coast and local government here.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill.
Agenda item number three, presentation by the Palm Coast Historical Society of the 2015 Visitors Pamphlet. Mr. Bill Venny, one of the first city councilmen in the city, will make our presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Councilman, I'll try to be civil today. And I'm really amazed. I don't usually get out this early, but what are you doing with the traffic on Palm Coast Parkway? I mean, there's a few cars out there that I didn't see 20 years ago. I'm Bill Venny, Vice President of the Palm Coast Historical Society, here along with Gene Sedlak, one of our board members. And I'm here on behalf of the President, Jim Canfield, and the rest of the organization. And one of the many things we do is, beside preserving the history of Palm Coast, we have prepared a visitor's guide, which I have today, the 2015 version, and I'd like to present them to you at this time. It includes demographics about the city, the parks, the history, the hotels, the restaurants, many things that somebody who is coming to Palm Coast for the first time would really be interested in knowing. And as a matter of fact, probably if you get to page 19, you might even find out who's running the city this year. We try to keep it up. We'll make it available in the future when the city has a visitor center. In the meantime, when the museum opens, when Holland Park gets completed, we'll have it there at the library, at the community center. And I think it really promotes the city, and it lets everyone, in my estimation, know how great this city is and not how bad it is. So let me provide you with it at this time. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Good morning, Bill.
Thank you, manager. That's one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, and please extend our thanks to all your board members and directors. Preserving our history is something very, very near and dear to us all, and thank you for your efforts. Agenda item number 3, presentation on the resident brand campaign, Making Our Future Together. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is something that is ongoing, and our branding team, and Cindy's going to give you the latest effort to help promote Palm Coast.
Good morning. I am here representing the branding team of the city, and I just wanted to update you on our latest effort with regard to branding. So branding of the city, we started it when the recession hit, and we were looking for additional ways to advance economic development in terms of attracting new residents and new businesses, and we put together an internal team. It's across the departments. There are employees from a number of departments to come up with a strategy, and that resulted in our Find Your Florida brand that probably most of you are very aware of. We had the video that we used, that we still use. It's a great video of Discover Palm Coast. And the first couple of years, we really targeted residents or property owners who own vacant lots here but have not yet moved. And we especially contacted them during the winter. It was maybe a little unfair to send them a postcard about how beautiful the weather was here in January, but we thought it was a good strategy, and we've heard that it had some results. And so that's sort of the history by how the brand got started. So last year, each year we kind of relook at it. We talk about what can we do this year that's something new and different. And last year we decided to do something that would be geared more to our current residents. And the philosophy behind that was most of us have moved here from somewhere else, and a lot of us still think of that place where we came from as home. We go home on vacation. We still love our teams there. We talk about that place, and we want that feeling to, we want people to have that feeling about Palm Coast, and we think that based on our research that people do love Palm Coast, and we just wanted to put together some stories about the different aspects of Palm Coast that make us such a great place to live, work, and play. And so we began collecting stories around some themes, and we timed this with our 15th anniversary as a city, and we gave this campaign a special tagline of its own, which is Making Our Future Together, which is kind of a play on words with the Find Your Florida. So far, we've put together three stories, and this is the first one. Each one has kind of a prominent visual. That's Carl Cody and the principal of FPC, Lynette Schott, in the photo there, and they're standing on Bulldog Drive when the construction was going on. And this first part of it really centered on growth and projects that we're doing, both public and private. There is a special website where we keep these stories, and it is palmcoastgov.com/future. And so you can go on, you can read a story where we interviewed Mrs. Schott and Carl Cody. I think we interviewed the mayor for that first story, talked a lot about the vision of the city and what our brand is in terms of environmental commitment, active lifestyle, quality of life. We also put additional information in beyond the story, which will be charts, graphics, some statistics and things. The second story that we focused on is related to Prosperity 2021. And the main story there involved an official at Sandvik Palm Coast, which is a light manufacturer of wire, thin wire. And the photo there is one of the employees at Sandvik at work. And this particular story also included our new economic development video, along with more information on the Prosperity 2021 plan and a story on the Palm Coast Business Assistance Center. And then the third part the third story we did really focuses a lot on quality of life. The photo there is a resident, Sally Boyce, and she is kayaking on Long Creek. And the story really focuses on the Boyces and how they ended up in Palm Coast. And they do have a very active lifestyle, and they talked about that. And it includes an interview with Luann Santangelo, our director of Parks and Rec, includes the Trek It Out map, the Parks and Rec video, and quite a few of the elements that we would want people to see, such as our park guide and things like that. So the website, again, is palmcoastgov.com/future. So where we're at now is that we're ready to move this a little bit more into the public forefront. We've been working on the backstory. We have placed some ads promoting this website for people to come and look at the story. But now we would like for our residents to tell their story. And so, you know, when we think of that, the branding team has had a discussion about how St. Augustine is just up the road from us, and they have this long history and many stories. But, you know, we're one of the newest cities in Florida, and we also have a lot of great stories. People can tell their story of, you know, how they ended up in Palm Coast, what their passions are now that they're in Palm Coast, the clubs, the activities, the volunteerism they're involved in. What they love most about Palm Coast, I guess, will be one of the main stories that we expect to hear. And so we're asking people to submit videos. They can also write in their story, but we'd really love to get video testimonials. And you can shoot it right on your cell phone, and you can just do it right on your cell phone. And then we have on the website a way that you can upload your video directly from your phone You don't even have to get it into your computer first. So I think we have one of the videos that we want to show you that's an example. Well, she really is saying something. I think they're giving me this.
Volume on your computer.
Boy, technology. If you go on the website, I will say there are a number of videos posted already, and most of them are employees.
Believe it or not, I had a...
All right, let's try this again. Okay.
I came down here from Annandale, Virginia. It was after the blizzard of 79. And after driving in that snow, I said, it's time to go to Florida. And we already had the property here. We purchased it in 1970 with the hope that someday we would retire to Florida. And I know there's a lot of other places, but it's a growing community. It's beautiful. It's easy to get around. And it's just exciting to watch it grow. And I just found my Florida by purchasing a lot here a long time ago. The one group that I joined is the Flagler County Genealogical Society. And we have a meeting once a month, and I just decided that I was going to find my ancestors. And believe it or not, I had a great-great-grandfather who didn't buy property, but he fought in the world of War of 1812. And they gave him property in Polk County in frostproof. So one thing I want to do is go down there and just look at it. But that's one thing I like to do right now is hunt for my ancestors. Hi, I'm Bonnie Sove, and I found my Florida in Palm Coast.
Well, as you can see, she has a great story, and we know there are a lot of other great stories. And so I would like to invite all of you and all of the members of our public to go onto our website and look at the questions that we're asking and put together a story and submit it. And hopefully within a few months, we'll have quite a few of them and can make a video showing a lot of stories. Have any questions?
Council questions? No. Thank you very much, Cindy. Agenda from one extreme to the other. Agenda item number 5, presentation and overview of fund accounting. The different kind of story to tell.
He's not smiling.
I don't see a lot of excitement about this one in the world right now.
All you had to do is get them to drop the D off of there.
Yes, exactly.
Still won't be fun.
Okay, good morning, Mayor and Council.
Good morning.
This is another in our series of budget preparation presentations and workshop items. This one is our fund accounting presentation. We're currently in May. You can see from January through April all the different presentations that we've already delivered to City Council and the public, and this is the latest. Of course, our process goes right through September, where the actual public hearings to adopt the budget take place. And then through November and December, where we go ahead and take a look at our year that just passed and how we did. So I want to talk about the regulatory authorities that we have to deal with in finance and accounting. What exactly is fund accounting? A review of our different revenue sources that cause us to have to use fund accounting, and then finish up with the balance of the tentative budget calendar. So there are a number of regulatory authorities we need to deal with. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board sets rules and regulations as far as preparing financial statements and displaying them for the public. It's an ever-changing environment with the GASB. The federal government, of course, levies to us, like they do many businesses, a lot of rules we've got to follow related to payroll taxes, 1099 reporting, specialty things for federal government, for governments such as debt issuance, grant compliance, as well as federal audit requirements.
Chris.
Yes, sir.
The GASB, is that state or federal?
It's neither. It's a board that covers all governmental accounting across the whole country. But it's not a federal agency.
Okay.
The state government, of course, various state statutes, Department of Revenue rules, Auditor General has a whole litany of things that we've got to deal with. Truth in millage, our whole millage rate process is determined by the state of Florida, various state grant compliance, and annual reporting requirements that we have each year that we have to satisfy. So fund accounting. What is fund accounting? Basically, it's a way for us to demonstrate legal compliance with restrictions on our different revenue sources. And there's a large what is a fund? Essentially, a fund is a separate set of books, a self-balancing set of accounts, and which ways that we keep track of these different revenues and what they're spent on separately from each other. There are a whole number on the left side of this slide of different types of fund types. Governmental, proprietary, and fiduciary are the primary three. The items in blue, which might be a little hard to see, are funds that we actually utilize here at the city. General fund, we have quite a number of special revenue funds, capital projects fund, enterprise internal service and trust funds. We'll talk a little bit more about those in a minute. Fund balance or reserves, we hear that term a lot. That's basically the excess of revenues over expenditures, or basically what's left at the end of the year. Those reserves are set aside for emergencies or one-time expenditures and generally are not meant to fund continuing yearly operations. We do have a fund balance policy that's set by City Council that determines how we deal with our fund balance and reserves, what the levels are, and at what points that we use them. So again, our main fund classifications, governmental, proprietary, and trust funds. Governmental funds are individual funds that are primarily supported by a tax revenue or some kind of tax revenue. Proprietary funds are supported primarily by user fees, and sometimes they're referred to as business-type entities. And trust funds are cases where we receive money that's actually not for the city, it's for somebody else. And we'll look at an example of that in just a minute. So what are governmental funds? The main fund is the general fund, and the kind of things that the government, the general fund pays for are city council expenses, administrative expenses, finance, community development, such as planning, code enforcement, construction management, and engineering. Of course, our fire and law enforcement expenditures, public works as it relates to streets and drainage, parks and facilities maintenance, our park and recreation programs, such as our golf course and tennis center, and we have some miscellaneous non-departmental items. Our capital projects fund is used to, again, from a tax standpoint, is used to account for taxes that we use specifically for capital projects. One of the ones going on today from the Capital Projects Fund is the renovation of Holland Park. We do have a whole number of special revenue funds. These can increase or decrease each year depending on the different revenue sources that we have to deal with. And we'll talk about some of those revenue sources in just a second. Our proprietary funds, again, are business-type entities primarily supported by charges for services or direct fees. So like our utility fund, our solid waste fund, and stormwater fund, we all pay fees for those functions, building permits, and IT fund, and internally our fleet and health insurance fund. And as far as our trust fund, we do have a trust fund for the Volunteer Firefighters Pension Fund. We receive money from the state, from the fire insurance premium taxes, that can only be spent on providing pensions for the volunteer firefighter group. And all of that is monitored by the state. And again, that's not our money. That's their money, and we simply keep track of it. So some examples of these legally restricted revenues, the small county surtax, again, that goes into the capital projects fund. Right now, again, we're working on the Holland Park renovation with some of those funds. Our utility revenues are restricted for the operation and expansion of the utility system. Any impact fees that we collect are for just capacity improvements related to growth. We can't use those to fix existing stuff or maintain existing stuff. And our grants, the grants are all very specific a lot of times and can only be used for that specific purpose. An example of a grant is the $10 million grant we currently have in place for the Palm Coast Parkway six-laning program. The city received about $10 million for that grant, and that's primarily what's funding that project. So this is a list of state-restricted revenue sources that the city receives. The left column is the revenue source. The right column is what the restriction is, in other words, what it can be spent on. We talked about the fire insurance premium tax, fuel tax refund. The city can get some the fuel taxes we pay back through a state program, but can only be used for construction and maintenance of roads. Police automation and education, we receive or have received portions of traffic tickets within Flagler County that can only be used for law enforcement expenditures. Our building permit and inspection fees can only be used to fund the building permit and inspection department. The local option county fuel tax can only be used for transportation expenditures. What we call portion B of the state revenue sharing can only be used for transportation expenditures. Any of the tax increment revenues within the CRA can only be used in the CRA area per the CRA plan. Again, impact fees for capacity improvements. And if we do have any special assessments, it can only be used for the purpose of that actual special assessment. Some others that we have. Our water and sewer charges, our actual bond covenants restrict how we can use our water and sewer revenues. Anything that's left after all of that satisfied has been restricted by City Council to be used just for the maintenance and expansion of the water and sewer service. We talked about the small county surtax. It's a portion of the local sales tax. That's actually restricted by the Flagler County ordinance that enacted it. There's a whole laundry list of uses, but primarily construction and improvement of public facilities is the main thrust of that particular tax. Again, our stormwater management fee, we have a number of loan covenants we need to satisfy. And after that, if anything's left, the City Council has determined that those funds are going to stay within the stormwater fund for that program. And, of course, City Council has set aside a disaster reserve and a disaster reserve policy specifically for use in any costs related to a disaster situation. There are also a number of unrestricted revenue sources, and what that means are revenues that City Council has discretion as to where they want to spend it and how they want to spend it, and in some cases how much to collect. Of course, property taxes is probably our number one of those revenues. We do get alcoholic beverage licensing taxes through the states. We have a business tax receipt program, communication services tax, which again comes through the state, but it's a tax on phone bills and satellite service, natural gas franchise fee, the state's half-cent sales tax program. Again, that's a different portion of the sales tax that comes back to the city, our solid waste franchise fee, and the A portion of state revenue sharing is also subject to discretion by City Council. Some other ones, the code enforcement, the red light camera ticket revenue, which at this point is being phased out, but City Council had purview over how that was spent and allocated it to the Streets Improvement Fund for safety improvements. And one of the taxes that we don't currently utilize at the city, which is called the public service tax, sometimes called the utilities tax, is also a revenue source that the city has discretion over how to spend it. So what's next in our presentations? The next one on May 26th is before City Council will be our long-term financial planning presentation. It's quite an interesting presentation about laying out the direction of the city is currently going financially. In June, we'll come back and talk more specifically about city revenue sources and property taxes. July, we'll fire up all the different budget workshops. Most importantly, in July is when the city will adopt a maximum millage rate, which will go out on the trim notices in August. We'll finish up all the budget workshops in August, and then September will be the public hearing, the two public hearings. The date's still to be determined on that in September. And that's it.
Thank you very much. Any council questions? comments.
Chris, what's the city's fiscal year again?
The fiscal year ends on September 30th.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Agenda item number 6, resolution approving the binding lot rescission agreement for lots 47 and 48. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is a parcel that at one time was originally platted as 3 lots. Previous property owner bounded and has made it into legally 1 lot, and the current property owner is requesting that City Council approve it to convert back into the original 3 lots so 3 homes can be built at this location. Constance has a very short presentation to give you a few more details.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm Constance Bentley in the Community Development Department, and I am presenting a rescission of a binding lot agreement, which was originally bound for the purposes of development over the lot lines. And they were 3 lots. Generally, when lots are bound, we can administratively bind 2 lots together, and we can rescind 2 lots, but when you get multiple lots of 3 to 4, they require council action. The location of the lot is south of Clubhouse Drive and west of Palm Harbor Parkway on Cole Place. And when you rescind a binding lot, it reverts back to the original platted lot that established it. So by rescinding these lots, they will go back to lots 46, 47, and 48 on Cole Place. And the city staff is recommending to council to adopt a resolution to approve the binding lot rescission agreement for these 3 lots.
That's all we have.
Any council questions?
Is this the infamous swimming pool lot?
This is it. The ex-swimming pool.
Ex-swimming pool, yes. A question. Did the previous owner request the rescission, a rescission?
Yes. The previous owner, the one that bought it with just a swimming pool,
yeah,
did unbind one from the other 2. So right now it's 2 lots.
Right.
In order to make it into the original 3 lots, it takes city council action.
And did he request it to be 3 at any time?
Constance, help me.
It was originally bound by the by Flagler County before we were a city.
When no, the house I'm talking about just the previous owner, the very previous owner, which was recently.
The previous owner had 3 lots, and we rescinded one of those lots from the 3. The new owner, which is Seagate Homes.
Did the previous owner request?
Let me try this. See, he asked if he could do it. We told him the process.
Okay.
He decided not to go through that process because it's a longer process, etc. So he just did the 2 lots,
right,
with the idea of selling these 2 lots to someone, okay, else, which turned out to be Seagate. So that's why, you know, I'm...
Okay. Well, I'm just checking because I was told it was refused, but
city staff cannot approve...
Right.
To go to 3 lots.
Right.
So, and there is a, you've got to hire, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically they basically have to do a survey and those type of things, correct, Constance?
That's correct. Plus they have to vacate the lots from any structures so that they are buildable lots once they are separated.
Okay. He was not told he couldn't do it. He was told the steps to go through, okay, and chose not to go through those steps.
Okay.
Other council questions? Open the meeting from the public. And for the public, wish to be heard on agenda item number 6. If so, come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes. Seeing no one approach the podium, come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 7, resolution approving a land donation agreement with LRA Hammock Beach, LLC, associated with the Palm Harbor Parkway Extension Project. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this presentation actually will cover a variety of our street projects. Carl is prepared to give you an update on not just Palm Harbor Extension, which is what the action items are for today primarily, but all of those that we have. And this item actually covers, or this presentation covers items 7 through 12. And so, Carl, if you would please proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor and City Council.
Good morning.
I'm Carl Cody with the Construction Management and Engineering Division. I am going to present to you today various transportation projects that are ongoing and some items that you will need action. The outline consists of going over some current roadway construction projects, giving you an update and status of those. Then I'll be discussing the Northeast Corridor projects, and then I'll have a summary of the action items. There are two current major projects that are ongoing right now. One is Royal Palms Parkway, which extends from Belterre West to Rimfire Drive. The other project is Palm Coast Parkway 6 laning, which begins roughly at Cypress Point Parkway and extends east to roughly Florida Park Drive. Royal Palms Parkway here is a safety improvement project. It consists of constructing paved shoulders, a right and left turn lane onto Rickenbacker Drive, a right turn lane onto Belterre Parkway, and improving the pedestrian crossing at the Rimfire Drive intersection. The construction is nearly complete. I believe all the paving operations are done, and they are sodding and wrapping up the project. Should be close to being complete by the end of this month. The other project, which has been ongoing for over a year now, is Palm Coast Parkway 6 laning. This project consists of increasing the capacity of the roadway from a 4-lane roadway to a 6-lane roadway. It adds an additional travel lane in each direction. We're extending some turn lanes and adding some dedicated turn lanes. We're also providing an 8-foot wide path on both sides of the roadway and replacing all the traffic signals with new mass arm signals. The construction of this project is roughly 75% complete. The south side of the roadway is pretty much wrapped up. The north side, they are near the end of that phase of the project. So in July timeframe, they'll be moving towards the median and working in the median. The project's anticipated to be complete by the end of this calendar year.
I have a question. At, for instance, Palm Coast Parkway and Old Kings Road, the turn lanes that would turn on Old Kings Road towards north, are those the stop area for that? When they stop at the red light, is that going to be reduced back? Because I'm trying to, you can't see the lights if you're up, but then I'm saying, well, if we move back, we're shortening the turn lane. I'm trying to understand. You see, understand
yeah,
what I'm saying?
I understand.
Okay.
There's certain criteria with how the signals are orientated, and I believe the stop bar is moving back slightly, not a whole lot.
Okay.
I'll have to double check that to be certain.
Okay, because I was just concerned that we were shortening, because we're not extending those turn lanes. Those are pretty much being left as is. But if we move that stop line back, we're shortening that, and it's already full. They're already usually.
Right. I believe it's a very short setback.
Okay.
There's an additional arrow in the median as well as the ones that are overhead.
Yes. Okay. Oh, is that going to remain? I thought that was just for construction.
No.
Okay.
Carl, are we going to extend those left turn lanes?
I do not recall. I know almost all the turn lanes do get extended. I'm not 100% certain if those are being extended as well. I'll double check that and get back to you and let you know.
But Carl, isn't it true that we're not going to need as much stacking because of we're going to have concurrent, is that what you call it?
Right, concurrent left turns.
Concurrent left turns. So the whole intersection will move quicker, so stacking won't be as much of an issue. The two lanes of stacking. What you're worried about, moving the stop bar loses queuing space.
Right.
right? But because the intersection, the whole timing will speed up through the whole intersection because of the concurrent. You know, you don't have to wait for one lane to turn, then the other, you know, one direction to turn, then the other direction. They're going to be turning at the same time. So then the whole intersection speeds up. So you have, okay, you don't need as much stacking space, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Not fully following you, but I know it's me. So.
Okay.
And then we have a lot of new projects up and coming in the northeast corridor of Palm Coast. There are four major projects. We have Matanzas Woods Parkway I-95 interchange, Oak Kings Road extension, Oak Kings Road widening, and Palm Harbor Parkway extension. This here is an aerial showing the various projects. We have the interchange. I don't seem to have a pointer here. But you can see my mouse here. We have the interchange here with 95. We have Oak Kings Road extension, which is, this is Forest Grove Drive extending north to Matanzas Woods Parkway. That is phase one of the extension project. Phase two of the extension project will take Oak Kings Road extension north back up to Oak Kings Road. We have Oak Kings Road four-laning or widening, which is basically the widening of the existing Oak Kings Road from Forest Grove south to Palm Coast Parkway. And the last project is Palm Harbor Parkway extension, which will basically take Palm Harbor Parkway at Fern Mill Drive and start to turn the roadway so it aligns with Matanzas Woods Parkway here just north of Matanzas High School right here.
Carl, I have a question. Last night at the Board of County Commissioners meeting, on their agenda was the approval to negotiate a contract to execute an agreement of request for professional construction of the Old Kings Road extension, Forest Grove Drive to Matanzas Wood Parkway. Apparently, in the county offices, they haven't yet hired an engineering firm. Is that going to upset our timetable any?
No, I believe that was for the CEI services, the services needed during the construction phase of the project,
right.
I believe.
Right, that's what it is.
Right, so that's in preparation for the construction bids, which are anticipated to come in the end of the month. So they're on target.
It just concerns me that because there is more than one governmental body working on this Matanzas Woods Overpass project, that I'm concerned that we're staying coordinated. I'm not saying we're not, but it's a concern of mine.
One question, Carl. Are we going to anticipating the Palm Harbor Parkway? Well, I don't know what you call it, extension or bypass. That's supposed to be done before next school
year? Yeah, the Palm Harbor extension project is only like a 6-month project.
Oh, okay.
Because a portion of the roadway in the center here is already constructed, so they're basically just constructing the two ends of the roadway.
It will be finished before the interchange, but it won't be finished before school starts.
No.
Not
okay.
Before school starts. It will be finished probably by the end of the calendar year time frame.
Okay. The goal is to have the intersection at Old Kings Road and Matanzas Woods completed before school. That's
right.
So that school traffic will have an intersection there that's
okay.
Basically
but
completed.
That construction won't affect traffic to the school.
Well, that's the goal, yes.
Okay.
As much as possible. Right. Construction is always a pain.
Yeah. Sure.
Just
no promises. No guarantees, actually.
And I'll go through each one of those projects with a little more information. The Matanzas Woods Parkway interchange is a county-managed project. Construction has begun. Hubbard Construction Company is the contractor on that project. It's roughly a $9 million project, and the duration for construction is approximately 1 year long. They do have a Facebook page, a website, and a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline number to call for citizens to call in with any information. They do have some major lane closures with the project. Matanzas Woods Parkway will be closed for the duration of the summer. So there will be a detour route for that, and then they will have some lane closures throughout the project. The website will give you the most up-to-date information regarding any lane closures. The Old Kings Road Extension Project, that is the first phase of the project. That's the four-laning segment from Forest Grove Drive up to Matanzas Woods Parkway. That project, the design is complete for that first phase. It's currently out for construction bids. I believe the bids are due the end of May. They plan on beginning construction this summer, and that's approximately a year-long project as well. The Old Kings Road Widening Project is a project that's funded by FDOT with the city. We are currently in the design phase. It's approximately 60% complete. It's a project roughly 3.1 miles long. It will convert the roadway from a two-lane roadway to a four-lane divided roadway. We'll be modifying and adding turn lanes, providing an 8-foot-wide path on both sides of the road, replacing traffic signal with a new mass arm signal. And one item that is on the agenda for action today is a change order for additional design services to extend the project 1,500 feet south of Palm Coast Parkway. This change will modify the design to optimize the traffic flow at the Old Kings Road Palm Coast Parkway intersection. This will allow the additional lanes needed south of Palm Coast Parkway for the widening north of the parkway to extend south. That way we'll get those concurrent left turn lanes north and south on Old Kings Road as well. The additional design phase fee is roughly $175,000. DOT providing funding in the amount of $125,000 for this portion, and it's currently funded in current fiscal year CIP.
Is the DOT funding in the bank? Is it a sure thing?
Yes, the agreement is between the county and DOT, and that's already been moved along and formalized. With approval of the change order, we can begin design.
So we would have to come up with another 50 and change.
Correct. And we budgeted $150,000 of city funds for this particular project. We went to DOT and requested funding, and they actually funded $125,000. So we'll only be using $50,000 of the $150,000 that we set aside.
And we have the $50,000.
Correct.
Okay.
The other major project is the Palm Harbor Parkway extension. This is an improvement to eliminate the 90-degree curve with Palm Harbor Parkway and Forest Grove Drive. We'll be constructing a new traffic signal at the Old Kings Road, Matanzas, Woods Parkway, and Palm Harbor Parkway intersection. There'll be a path on both sides of the roadway and some landscape improvements. One of the first items for action is the land donation. This is necessary for the construction of the Forest Grove cul-de-sac and drainage improvements.
Excuse me, for the benefit of people listening, this is agenda item number 7, the land donation.
The item hashed in red is the area for the land donation. Forest Grove will be disconnected from Palm Harbor Parkway, so Forest Grove does not become a cut-through road. There'll be a cul-de-sac generated to serve the residential lots along that roadway, and the donated land will provide the ability to construct that cul-de-sac and the associated drainage. It is a zero-cost donation to the city, roughly of a quarter acre. Next item on the council agenda is for approving the use of lands that the city purchased for right-of-way. Along Palm Harbor Parkway and Forest Grove, city purchased some commercial land as well as some residential lots, so that would be approving those lands for right-of-way. And the second item is for the donated lands on Forest Grove Drive to convert or approve the use of that quarter acre as right-of-way as well. The next action item for City Council is the approval of the construction expenses and contract. Hubbard Construction was the low bidder for the project. The base bid, which was negotiated for the roadway and signalization line items, is just over $2.5 million. And there's a third landscape bid item that the city negotiated with them to work out a self-perform option for the city to self-perform some of the work to produce some cost savings. Hubbard Construction will install the irrigation sleeves, the electrical, the sod, and some other miscellaneous items. And the city will install the trees, the shrubs, the mulch, and the irrigation system. That, with the city self-performing work, is going to result in a savings of approximately $125,000. We then are setting aside a contingency, roughly in the amount of 10% of the contract with Hubbard Construction, so the total construction cost is approximately $3.125 million.
Carl, the savings to the city, excuse me, we won't, will the city have to hire any more people to work in public works to do this? Have we got the staff in place to do this?
This would be one of the projects that the city performs, so it would just be, we have to work it into their plan. It wouldn't be in addition to what they're doing. It would be fit into their current in-house projects.
Right. We would just schedule it as part of our construction crew, same one that does our paths and other landscapes.
And the $125,000 in savings is the difference between what our construction crew can do it for and what a contractor would do it for.
Right. We actually received a alternative bid that we thought was very high, and then that's why we said we can do this much more efficiently and save the dollar. So that's why we took it on.
Okay.
And one thing of note, I know that Chris mentioned during the workshop, was that a large portion of this expense is going to be reimbursed from the county as part of the impact fee reimbursement program, and that's approximately $2 million that will be coming back to the city. The next item is approval of some expenses for some wetland mitigation. We have an agreement with Wilson Green for the credit purchase of 0.18 state and 1.0 federal credits at $19,650. The next item is also an agreement with LRA Hammock Beach for a conservation easement of roughly 61 acres. This placement of a conservation easement results in 0.642 state and federal credits, and that cost is just over $48,000. And the last item was an item that we were not able to purchase from a wetland mitigation bank. There are some herbaceous wetland impacts in the project. So since there are no wetland mitigation banks in our basin that offer those for sale, we had to create a plan to construct herbaceous wetlands. The conservatory, LRA Hammock Beach, had some lands that had herbaceous wetlands on them. We were going to expand and enhance those wetlands. It's going to produce 1.71 state credits, and the cost to construct, to manage those wetlands, and to preserve them is just over $157,000. The total wetland mitigation costs come to $225,000.
Hey, Carl, I have a question. Can you go back two slides? Right there.
Oh, one more, I'm sorry.
I'm looking at the agenda. I'm on page 84. Is that what I'm looking at here? Are these the bids, and then I'm looking at the Hubbard bid?
Yeah, there's an engineer's estimate, and there are four bids. I don't know if that's what you have up.
Do you have the agenda?
No. I don't have it with
me. Let me wait for Mr. Landon.
Yeah.
You got it?
I'm there.
Is that what we're looking at here? In other words, these numbers from Hubbard, I know these are the four bids plus the engineer's estimate.
Right, exactly.
And then I'm looking up here, and I'm trying to correlate the dollars, because there were two bids here within $25,000.
Right.
And I'm trying to understand if we change the bid on the landscaping, does that change the low bidder?
No.
Okay.
Right, because if you see what Carl has on the screen,
yeah,
versus what you're looking at,
right,
yours has a line for roadway and signalization separated out.
Right.
So you have to add those two together.
Right, to get to 2505.
Yeah, it's actually a little different.
I'm looking at the landscape component. Hubbard is about almost $100,000 more than the next bidder.
Right, so once you take the landscaping component out, Hubbard is even lower. In other words, the next bidder without landscaping would be almost $100,000 more for the base bid of roadway and signalization. By taking it out, they're even more competitive.
Well, you would take it out for both, though, wouldn't you?
Right, right.
Okay.
Exactly. In other words, yes, the bottom line is that if you took the landscaping out altogether, Hubbard would still be the low bidder.
Yeah, if you took the landscaping out altogether.
Right.
But if we reduce... I'll run the numbers in my... But you see what I'm saying?
We wouldn't receive the same savings in landscape with the second bidder because his landscape bid was much lower. So the savings would be less if we negotiated with him.
Okay.
Because there's less dollars to negotiate with.
So it would be relative across.
Correct.
All right.
And I'm still wrestling with the savings, but I'd like to see a breakdown of exactly what goes into the $125,000. It just seems too good to be true. But I'm willing to hold back until I see a financial analysis.
Yeah, we didn't do hard. I mean, we got some irrigation price quotes ourselves. The landscaping, the trees and shrubs, we used some past dollars. So those could vary slightly. That's why it's an approximate number. But
when you say $125,000 savings, is that in labor, material, combination
both
of the two?
Profit. And if you notice that there was a large swing with the different bidders on landscaping, which means that lots of times we find that true with roadway construction people, that they will increase their amount of profit and overhead for landscaping.
But if you're going to spend some of your budgeted money to get the $125,000 savings that you would not have spent had a contractor done it, then that has to be debited from your savings.
Right.
Because you had to spend money to get the 125.
Right. And we have that up there. You'll see 150,000 is what we're estimating that we're going to spend. We still are asking them to do the items, particularly those that go under the underground work. But you add those two up, and it's 350,000, whereas their bid came in over 417,000. So that's where you're seeing a good portion of it. But once again, those are estimates.
I understand. But that's a lot of money to save.
We find quite often that when we do it in-house for certain items, and landscaping is one of those where we do save a substantial amount of money.
And I will track that and compare the two when the project is over and provide you that information.
Okay.
The other item with the Palm Harbor Extension project is a change order with LRA Hammock Beach for construction, engineering, and inspection services, known as CEI services, as well as testing. That's just over $120,000. We have an item for a streetlight agreement with FPL. That cost is just over $31,000. That will relocate three existing streetlights and convert them to LED, as well as provide 37 new LED streetlights. We have a estimated savings of $9 per pole, which would result in a payback of just over 7 years by using LED lights. And this is a summary of the council action items. We had the Old Kings Road widening project change order with DRMP, just over $175,000. And then we had the six items with the Palm Harbor Extension project, the land donation at no cost, approval of lands for right-of-way, no dollars associated with those. We had the construction expenses, the Hubbard contract, the landscape items for Hubbard in the city, and the contingency. We had the wetland mitigation agreements, the purchase of the credits from the bank, as well as the credit agreement with LRA Hammock Beach for the wetland creation and conservation easement. We had the item for a change order for construction engineering inspection services with LRA Hammock Beach at just over $120,000, as well as the last item for street lighting with FPL, just over $31,000.
Council, this is items 7 through 12 on our agenda. You asked questions as we've gone along. Are there any additional questions at this point before we open the meeting to the public?
Just one, Your Honor. Are all these projects funded?
Yes.
Okay. For procedural reasons, we have to take each resolution separately. So at this point, we're on agenda item number 7. You've heard the presentation. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 7? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 8. Anyone from the public wish to speak on agenda item number 8? This is the approval of the right-of-way maps for the Palm Harbor Parkway extension. Seeing no one approach the podium, we come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 9. This is a resolution approving construction contract with Hubbard and city expenses for the Palm Harbor extension project. And from the public, wish to be heard on agenda item number 9. Please give us your name. Limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. I live on Florida Park Drive, and a lot of traffic is being, Florida Park Drive is being used as an exchange between Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway. And there's 8,000 cars per day, 528 trucks per day that use Florida Park Drive. So what I'm concerned about with this construction contract, can we get an assurance that the contractor will not use Florida Park Drive to have their construction equipment coming up and down our road? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look into that one. Mr. Landon? This is agenda item number 9.
I hope it's correct. My question involves the Palm Coast Parkway construction. And I hope I'm in the right church here.
I'm not sure that you are.
Well, you presented the changes on the Palm Coast Parkway construction, the turns, et cetera, and I'm not following where it's in here.
Well, anyway, see if I can identify it for you. You had a mass presentation. Go ahead.
Okay. My question about Palm Coast Parkway is this. Let's envision ourselves looking westbound at the intersection of Old Kings Road and Palm Coast Parkway. You will note, and I'm sure you all know, there is a rise in the grade from that point heading westbound, from Old Kings Road heading westbound. My concern is this. That is an absolutely disastrous area for anyone making a turn or coming straight on, because the traffic that is going to go north, turning on, is vulnerable to serious accidents because there is no barrier. It's only a small little barrier. So those turns being made and coming straight away present a definite hazard. The second question I have about, there is a dead turn opposite Bell's, adjacent to Bell's on Palm Coast Parkway, which has been isolated for years, non-usable. Will that be removed, and will this gradient be straightened out or some type of a partition put in to protect traffic on the eastbound side? Thank you.
We'll try to get you an answer on that one. Let's hold those two questions in abeyance because we are on agenda item number 9, which is not relevant, but we'll come back to those questions. Anyone else wish to speak on agenda item number 9?
Mayor, the item about truck traffic, I think, was tied into Palm Harbor. I don't know that we've actually looked at that. But it is a very good point of trying to make sure they use, in this case, Old Kings Road makes a lot of sense. The key to it, though, is that we always have to be careful, because if we make them go somewhere else, that's another residential street. And in this case, if they go Old Kings Road, all that construction traffic is going to have to use Forest Grove, which is another residential street. So we'd have to get together with the contractor. I can't.
Well, I think that's what I'm going to recommend. So yeah. Our traffic engineer, get with Hubbard.
Right.
And if nothing else, lay out for them what our concerns are and see if they can offer alternatives.
Right. And try to do something that's logical and has the least amount of impact. But I can't promise you we're not going to impact residential
streets.
We can
certainly give it a try.
Yep.
Isn't Hubbard from Jacksonville?
Yes.
So it's likely they'll come down US 1.
A lot of the traffic is suppliers and those type of things. Right. But yes, it very likely could use Matanzas as much as possible. Yep.
Okay. Back to council on agenda item number 9. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 10. Resolution approving the agreement to assign mitigation credits with LRA Hammock Beach, LLC. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 10? Mitigation credits are one of those fine things that the EPA requires that we do.
Reluctantly move. Oh, are we still in public comment?
That was my comment to the public to see if that would engender any public comment. Let's, seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close public portion of the meeting. Come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Well, fine. I reluctantly, but understand the necessity and move approval.
Second. Okay.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 11, a resolution approving a change order with LRA Hammock Beach, LLC, related to the Palm Harbor Parkway Extension Phase 2 project. And if in the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 11. Sorry you have to sit through all this, but that's what the law requires. Seeing no one approach the podium, come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Move and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 12. I'd like to comment on this one before we open it to the public. The LED lighting is something that I've been a proponent of for quite a few years. The life expectancy of the bulb is longer. The cost of the electricity is significantly lower. And it is my suspicion that over the coming years, you will see your utility companies, whether it be an FPNL or any of the other utility companies, they're gradually going to be converting to LEDs, if for no other reason than they can extend the life of their electric producing plants. The interesting thing is, in Carl's presentation, it's a little misleading. The payback is something slightly over 7 years. But once you pass that 7-year mark, you're no longer in payback. Now you're essentially in money savings or profit, because the life expectancy of those lights is longer than 7 years, and once they're up, FPNL assumes the responsibility for the maintenance of the light. So after 7 years, we're home free and saving the city considerable money. So, anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 12? This is the LED light FPNL. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Well, I enthusiastically move approval then.
Thank you very much.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 13, resolution approving fiscal year 2015-16 city council priorities.
Your Honor, while we're getting set up for that, I'm nosy, so I'm going to ask Councilman DiLorenzo to explain his reluctance to approve the mitigation credit one.
Oh, it's just that we're paying, we're being required by another government agency to spend dollars on the mitigation of wetlands. I mean, I guess the one is more important than the other one. We got that very good wetland that runs along the creek course there at the corner of Forest Grove and Palm Harbor. I guess that one's really important to probably, and it looks like we're going to improve that one, and that one is costing the most.
Are there any alternatives to
that? No, there's nothing you can do. That's the process. So
the thing that you'll find interesting, and I hope Denise is not going to talk to us about this, but let's say you impact 5 acres of wetlands. You may be required to mitigate with 10, 15, 20 acres of wetlands. There's something called UMAM credits and something that's way beyond my pay grade. But it's not a one-for-one at all. It's a somewhat arbitrary analysis.
I asked that question in the workshop last week, and it was, I think, 6-point-something acres roughly, but we're mitigating for 64 acres.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's something over which we have no control.
Right.
So.
And there is a formula somewhere.
Oh, yeah, there is. It's called UMAM. What does UMAM stand for?
Uniform Mitigation Assessment Methodology.
Yes, you should know.
But
yes, there is a formula.
There's a formula, but the scientists don't always agree on it, do they?
And it's a formula that we did not get to participate in the creation thereof. Okay.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 13, fiscal year 2015-16 City Council priorities. Mr. Landon, you going to comment?
This is our annual process. You know, it definitely is an addition to our current strategic action plan. It's updated on a regular basis, and Denise has walked City Council through this with some one-on-one conversations, and then you've had a couple of workshops on it. And at this point, we're ready for City Council to take action on the priorities for this year. There's not a, and I want to stress, they're in addition to what we already have on the plate. And Denise will go through the details here.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. Good afternoon. Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Just to echo Mr. Landon's brief overview, we have been approaching this on an ongoing basis, and just reflect on Mr. Quinn's presentation. This is in tandem with the budget process. We started the process in January of delivering the city citizen survey results, and again in March with the annual progress report that reflected on those results from the citizen survey. In early April, we conducted the one-on-one interviews with each council member to actually evaluate the strategic action plan. And the purpose of that is the plan is really our roadmap to our vision. And it's structured in such a way that we have the ability to become reactionary to anything in our community that we need. It's a nimble document. It's a living document. So we come to City Council every year, get the one-on-one, and then the team's approach is to facilitate what we hear from council and deliver that at workshop. And so April 28th, we provided the input. Over the course of the last two workshops, we've been fine-tuning the topics, trying to really home in on what council sees in our priorities. And again, just to reflect on Mr. Landon's comment, our previous fiscal year priorities, there were 18 of those. Of course, those are ongoing. We heard from City Council a lot of information about what we're already doing, so we're taking that and delivering that into the overall process. And at last workshop, and one of the items today for Council's consideration, is we had consensus on 4 points of interest. That's actually in an exhibit, and we'll go into that in the upcoming slides. With the ultimate goal of finalizing the priorities to blend them into the overall process. Now, I mentioned briefly the role of SAP, the Strategic Action Plan, and beyond me just adoring saying SAP on numerous occasions, it's really to dissect what our vision is. And we have 6 goals here. And what we've actually done over the course of the years is bridge a closer relationship with the budget. So these priorities actually get into the machine, and we look at how to implement them through the performance measure tracking process. So this is a linear type of flow chart of what happens when you actually take action on these priorities. So, of course, we're at the strategic action plan evaluation. We're getting direction from City Council. And from that point, after action, we create what's called an action agenda. And that's what we're going to do for the next year. That's what we're held to over the course of the next fiscal year. And then, of course, it gets budgeted and we implement it.
We have approximately 400 performance measures, and those are activities that support our approaches and ultimately the priorities. And as City Council is aware of, but the public may not be, we track this throughout the year, and we do quarterly reviews and reflect on our budget, and again, that's through our performance measures. And every year, we try to fine-tune again and again our process, make it better. And the first year, and to applaud the finance team of delivering our measuring results document, and that's kind of just our showcase of what we do, how we do it, and seeking feedback from ICMA. And actually, the first year we delivered that, we got recognized as among 11 jurisdictions that actually received the certificate of distinction for our ability of doing very, very good performance management. So from the last workshop, this is what we heard. We've worked on the consensus items. I know that there was some rewording that was asked from the staff. These are the areas that we heard that were possible additional priorities. And these are actually on your Exhibit A that is attached to the resolution. And so I just want to go through these very quickly. Identify and evaluate strategies to promote infill development within the original ITT club area. The second, gain a better understanding of public transportation services and public need through a presentation from Flagler County Transportation Services. Facilitate a group discussion with property owners along Holt Grove Grade to determine interest and feasibility of master planning stormwater facilities. And the final that we heard from a consensus standpoint, update the transportation impact fee study. So with this, I'll move on to the next item, and this is actually areas that we also need direction on, and we basically highlighted them in workshop as potential vote-in priorities. So we call these outstanding points of interest, those that we didn't really hear an echo of consensus. Involve BAC staff in the review of private development projects to identify issues and develop solutions in collaboration with owners, consultants, end users, and city staff. So there was a lot of wordsmithing on this one from what we heard from all the council members. Second, provide continuous street lighting along major roadways. And the third is provide capital funding to the Arts Foundation. So with these items in front of you today, again, these are the four that from staff's point of view, we heard consensus. Those are on the resolution exhibit. And we're asking council to, again, take action to approve the four or not. And then also, we need to hear from you if you would want to add these three, and we can amend the resolution exhibit for final adoption.
Is that it?
That's it. Thank you, Council. Just here for questions.
Just a comment for the benefit of the public. If we adopt these today, this is not the end of the process, because as you can imagine, every one of these items has budgetary impact. So if we say to staff, yes, we want to promote infill development within the original club, staff will come back and say, well, here's a way in which we can accomplish this, and here's what it's going to cost. And as we move further in the budget process, we will decide, wait a minute, the cost-benefit ratio is there or isn't there? So we may or may not include these in the final budget. It's something we'd like to accomplish, but it's always a question of can you do it within your budget, or if it's so important and you don't want to take away from some other project, you may have to raise taxes, something that nobody likes to hear about. So these, even if they're adopted today, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to happen. So. Council, questions, comments?
I have a comment, Mr. Mayor. I'm just a little disappointed in there is nothing up there that is charging the city manager and staff to become proactive in economic development from the standpoint of not waiting for companies to come to us, but for us to go out and try and grow our community. Over the last 13 years, our citizen survey has indicated that either number one or number two concern or items that they would like to see the city work on is our jobs and economic growth. Over the last 13 years, we have rated as far as economic growth in the 30 percentile, and in jobs and favorability of work about in the 6 to 7% range. So two items or two indications that are very much wanted by the people of Palm Coast, and two items that are not are just not being addressed. But like the mayor said, this doesn't mean it's not the end of it. There's just still money can be put in budget for. So just to the people, I just want them to know that they know this is something I'm trying to get done, that I will take this up with the budget later. But I'm just a little disappointed that we couldn't pick that into some form and get it in there.
Thank you. Councilmember Nobile, thank you so much for bringing up that point. I should have put a little bit more emphasis on it in the earlier part of the presentation. Is over the course of the two last workshops, we identified certain points of topics as existing.
Yes.
So on the last workshop, that was one of the existing points of interest. And the steps taken from this point forward is to fine-tune what we're already doing.
Okay.
And actually blend in those comments. So nothing...
Well, the thing is the strategies haven't changed. And the strategies really don't reflect...
The strategies are not producing your desired...
Not only not producing, but they're not directed at... Well, yeah, it's go both ways. Yes, they're not producing the results. And not me. Again, I would like to see growth, but... I'm looking at the citizen survey as items that are number one and number two over the last 13 years, and we're at the bottom of performance. And, you know, I'd like to see us proactively saying, okay, what we're doing is not working. And I think it ultimately comes down to the dollars. You know, when we decide we're going to do this, do we want to put the money into it? But I'd still like to see... I still would have liked to see some form of charge to the staff, the city staff, to you know, come up with something there. But you know, fight's not over.
If I could, well, there is no fight.
If I could
piggyback on particularly what Denise said, is that there are things we're doing that are proactive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some of those are headed to City Council here shortly in the next couple of meetings. There are still other things we need to be doing. As we talked about during this whole process, we are continuing trying to grow the proactive efforts, mm-hmm. and that is not something new. It is good to hear new council members say that, yes, that is still a priority, but it is...
And I don't... Let me just... Jim, I'm not saying... Mr. Land, I'm not saying your efforts are well taken, and I know the things that are going on, and a lot of people don't yet. But I would like to see... And here's the only reason I like to see the specific charges, because then the money can go there. You know what I mean? Because I hear, like, at the last... At the last workshop, Bo, you know, is a part-time kind of economic. He's got other roles. He, you know, and it's hard to get that if we're not.
Yeah, we.
Let me offer a thought. If you go to the next slide, the things you're looking for. Involve the BAC staff in review of private development projects, so on and so forth. We also know, similar to the transportation issue, that the county is putting forth effort. It might be worthwhile to include within number one getting a discussion with the county's economic development organization, with their director, their consultants, and see if there's some way that together we can move forward in the direction that Mr. Nobile is suggesting. What I don't want to see is competition or two engines trying to run parallel down a down parallel sets of tracks. I'd rather have one engine pushing the other engine or vice versa. So maybe incorporating that concept into that one.
And that's a good point. It could be because we don't want to duplicate, especially dollars, you know, going to the same thing. But I think one of the things we have figured is that what the county does would be different than what we're trying, you know.
But so I'm not, that, yeah, I don't know that for a fact.
I think I do, but okay. But it's not just for me to know. It's for everybody to know.
Mr. Mayor, are we continuing with comments here?
Yeah, this is comment. This is okay. We're going to open to the public eventually.
Okay. Would you go back a slide, please, Denise? I was thinking the same thing. Steve, I don't think this is exactly what you're saying, but I think 1, 3, and 4 are all economic development related.
Yes.
It's not what you're asking for, what you're looking for.
But
I've been thinking about what you said at the workshop, and I think number 2, and Mayor, this is basically what you said, but I think if you read number 2, but put Flagler County Economic Development every time it says public transportation there, what we said about public transportation is, well, we don't really know. So we may be able to make a better decision in the future if we had more information. And
I have no issue with that. If we add another one,
we would know more for when we need to make these decisions.
And everything has to start with step one.
All right. Yeah. So,
but economic development, I'm sure there's a matrix of activities that you can do. What we need to look at is, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
What is the county doing? And then where in the matrix are there gaps?
Correct.
And then how do we address those gaps? So,
and that works. I mean, that first step of, well, let's figure out where we are, what's missing, and then pinpoint it and move on.
So I would like to see that presentation. I'd have to ask, you know, Flagler County to come in and the EDO.
Yeah.
And
so why don't we...
EDOC.
If council's willing, let's add that as a fifth item.
Right.
I think that's already in the schedule.
Yeah,
doing these things.
Yeah.
But
just a couple steps
to Mr. Nobile's point, it doesn't stop with a presentation.
Right.
The presentation is the first step in an ongoing process.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, City Council, for focusing on those items, because they didn't fall off the list. Just to talk about the structure of what we do. We delivered all the interview comments to City Council, and just to be fair to what the adoption is doing, the existing feedback, if you remember from the workshops, get a presentation from Flagler County for the economics, that's existing. So that becomes actually by default part of our action agenda. So what we're looking for is a formalized adoption of those areas that we weren't sure that we were getting the feedback from, and taking those and actually prioritizing them. The existing feedback that we have, that there was probably about 10 plus existing, and that just adds us focus to what we're already doing. That is going to have action in the next fiscal year.
Mr. Mayor. Denise, we discussed expanding the citizen survey through an internal. So that this is an example of what you're saying. That goes into an existing thing that we're doing. But you've heard our discussion, our consensus, that we would like to see more, and so that'll just step in there and be the next evolution of that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right on point.
Right.
I mean, what we're measuring is over 400 items. And so, you know, you've all gone through quite a lengthy process. Now we're kind of at a point in time where we're just seeing a small snapshot of what we consider new, but we definitely put the asterisk next to the ones that you've emphasized that you want us to continue to focus on. But we are trying now to just focus on the new ones. It is difficult when you have just that snapshot, but it's also a very lengthy process, an ongoing process.
And if I can make one more comment, Denise, your team
you and your team, when I first met with you guys and you laid out everything, I think you're doing a great job. I think this, the goals, the strategies, the measurements is all above perfect. I mean, it's just excellent work.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Thank you. Again, this the purpose of this resolution is to provide focus for additional items for the city to concentrate upon in the next fiscal year. So at this time, we'll open the meeting to the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 13, which has to do with council priorities? Please give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Jack Carroll, I live in Palm Coast. Quite a few years back, if I'm not mistaken, the Art Foundation assured the city council that they were going to get the monies to build their establishment by contributions. And that was a guarantee that they gave to the city council. Now, why are we giving them more money when they assured us 5 or 6 years ago, whatever it was, I don't remember. My brain won't go back that far. But I remember distinctly that they said they could raise $1 million to their project. Now, I'm sure three of your council members weren't there. But that's why I want to know why, if they can guarantee donations, why are we giving them $125,000?
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Carol McCullough. I just wanted to make one comment. Councilman Nobile rightly raised the issue of the citizen survey. Well, I think you said, I can't remember the numbers exactly, but a huge percentage of people expressed concern about jobs and economic growth. And the only point I wanted to make was to kind of put it in perspective that economic growth and jobs have been an issue in the entire nation for 8 years. So that's all I wanted to say regarding that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Mary Hampton from Cypress Knoll. What survey? Could somebody please explain after I sit down? I'm a citizen. I never heard about this survey. Is it supposed to go to all of us? And secondly, last night I got something on the internet from a friend up north and a friend in Sarasota. In Sarasota, in the past 5 years, their homes have doubled in value. In 10 years, I'd be lucky to sell mine. I don't know if you guys saw this or not on the internet. I don't expect you to reply to it today, but it's a big concern because none of us will be able to sell our homes. It lists Palm Coast as the 10th worst city in all of Florida. The 10th worst. How many cities are there total?
411.
How many?
411.
Okay. This is wrong then. It said 288. However, is it wrong that we are the 10th worst? They used objective criteria. If you get some people and you do some interviews, you might get subjective criteria. So you need to go onto the internet and check this out. I'll give you a copy.
Thank you.
I have one. Thank you. You'll have to give one to the clerk.
Yeah. I'll give you this one. Okay.
You can have mine.
You can have it. Did we wind up where we started? Next speaker, please. Next speaker.
Hi, Dan Carmichael McMillan. I'm here to speak about one of the priorities I'd like for you guys to actually really take a look at. Over the last 5 years, well, for 5 years in a row, Palm Coast had the worst unemployment rate in Florida. And when we went to second place, it was like there was a celebration, as if we accomplished something. Here we have another discussion where we're talking about 5 years later, we're going to do something to help the 33,000 people who are not retired here in Palm Coast. Okay? I don't believe you. It's basically, you know, a couple weeks ago, you had the city manager who I respect very much, discussing this very issue, and his response over years at many events I've seen was, who moved to Palm Coast for a job? Okay, who moved to Palm Coast for a job? Well, there are 33,000 people here who need a job, and they're here. And I'd like for you guys to actually, they may not vote, so they may not be politically necessary to listen to right now, but perhaps they will start. And I just want you guys to really give it some serious consideration that there are 33,000 people here who need a better economic environment. As far as that website that was just discussed, one of the two factors that Palm Coast failed in, which landed it at number 10, was the poor economic environment was the number one issue, and education was number two, but I suppose that would be the county's problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Mayor, question, is this public participation at this point?
No.
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 Okay.
This is on the resolution approving city council priorities.
So you will.
Anyone else wish to speak on city council priorities? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close that portion of the public meeting. Let's see. The first question was, why is the city giving $125,000 to the Arts Foundation? That is not a decision that has been made. To bring public up to date, I received a communication from the Arts Foundation. They have had conversations with the county, and they represent that the county may be able to provide $150,000 if Palm Coast is willing to match it. So it's $150,000, not $125,000. But they point out that if they get letters of intent or letters of commitment from these two governments, that the state has a $450,000 grant that they will provide. But this is something that City Council has not discussed yet, and there's certainly been no decision made. About the citizen survey, is a survey instrument created by ICMA, I believe. Is it ICMA's product?
Yeah. National Research Center
National Research.
In conjunction with ICMA. Okay.
They send this survey to a statistically valid number of residents. We've been doing this survey for
13 years.
Once in those 13 years, my family received the survey. So it's a portion of the citizens chosen at random, supposedly representing a demographic spread of the citizenry of Palm Coast. It is a survey that is not exclusively relevant to Palm Coast. It is a survey that is used nationwide, and some of the questions, when you look at the survey, have really no bearing on Palm Coast whatsoever. How do you rate your public transit system? Well, we don't have a public transit system, that kind of thing. This is what Mr. DiLorenzo was alluding to. Is there some way that we can supplement this survey or a different kind of survey to get issues or more issues that are more relevant to Palm Coast? Job creation, that will be an issue for us forever. Palm Coast started out as a retirement community, quote unquote. It is now a bedroom community, quote unquote. Many of the people who are unemployed lost jobs not here in Palm Coast, but in surrounding counties. That's something over which we have very little control. But this goes to Mr. Nobile's point. Can we do something to create more jobs here?
Your Honor, I'd like to comment on that.
Sure.
One of the things that we have to decide as a city government is how responsible is the government for creating jobs? Now, we have a liberal government in Washington, D.C. that creates millions of jobs, and I pay for them every day. And we could do the same in Palm Coast. I'm sure we could come up with all kinds of public works projects and put these 33,000 people to work, but how much are the citizens willing to pay to do this? Are we a liberal form of government or not?
I don't believe that's the basis, whether we're liberal or not. I think whether we're human or not. We all have to work, and it's not a sense first of all, when you look to Washington, you know, if they're doing it, you don't do it. You know, you do the opposite.
Yeah.
And we're not looking at creating jobs. We're looking at doing everything possible to create an environment for companies and potential employees to come to, and a mechanism to make these companies aware that we are here, but not actually to say, oh, we're going to create 50 jobs or something like that.
I agree, that's
my thought. Okay.
No, I agree with you, Steve, but you get a lot of questions when you run for office, and I'm sure you were no exception, is what are you going to do to create jobs? And the thing of it is that it's not the government's job to create jobs. It's the government's job to, as you say, provide an environment that's friendly to business and try to attract them.
Correct.
I'm okay with that.
To some extent, discussion item number three, Hargrove Grade, that could conceivably create a better environment.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's items there. I mean, we're looking at our regulations. If you look on this list alone, number one, we're taking an overview of our regulations and seeing where there's opportunities to make it easier to create jobs for the private sector to create jobs in Palm Coast. Number three, we're working with landowners to try to help them get to a point where they can reduce their land costs so they can attract those larger businesses. That's the idea behind that. But I think it should be noted that there are more people working in Flagler County now than ever before. Even in the boom years, there's still significantly more people working now. And we've added, I'm going to ask for your help because I don't remember the number, 5,500 jobs over the last...
Yeah, let's not get into numbers because the numbers are deceiving. They're all working at McDonald's and retail shops. They're not livable salaries. We have six McDonald's. We have restaurants. We don't have professional jobs that are paying people a professional wage, but the number of jobs has increased. But that's I don't even want to concerning ourselves with that. I want what my first point was at the first workshop when I talked about this was everything Palm Coast has done and is doing to create an environment that's rich for growth and business is good, is perfect. We're doing a great job with infrastructure, with the things you're talking about, even adding in here. What I'm talking about is the one component that says we've built the field of dreams. Now let's go make sure the teams know that we have this. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
And we've been successful.
Similar to our program of attracting residents.
Exactly.
A similar program to attract business.
Exactly.
Okay. I think we understand. Are there any further comments on this? Otherwise, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve with the inclusion of, I'm exactly sure how I phrased it, but similar to number two, with relating to public transportation, a similar activity relating to the county and its economic development organization, the matrix, the gap, so on and so forth.
Is that understandable,
spending.
Denise? Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think, scheduled like a process. Sometime very soon. You'll see that one very
soon.
We're
going to see it, apparently.
Well, we need to see it sooner rather than later because, as I said, these have budget implications.
Right.
And once the budget is adopted, I've got another year to wait.
Are we voting on this page or both pages?
We would ask that you separate those out, that if you could vote on this page plus what the mayor added, and then the other ones, I think, would be best if you vote on each one of those separately because
Okay. So, a five-item list of additional priorities. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries out objection. Let's go to the second. Okay, we're going to take these individually. Involve the Business Assistance Center staff in review of private development projects. This, Mr. DiLorenzo, this was your, why don't you explain to the public what it is you envision?
Okay, first I want to thank staff for helping with this language, because I think they really did a better job of explaining it in this sentence than I was able to. Having a just a better communication between prospective development and city staff can really make the process a lot faster, and you know, time is money. So I think this really does it. This says, okay, we're gonna utilize the staff at the BAC to work with between the development consultants and the city staff to move the process along quicker and to facilitate better communication.
My only modification, if it's necessary, private development projects. That sounds to me like the traditional residential development, commercial development, but I think that could be broadened in line with what Steve is suggesting. Suppose somebody comes in and wants to open a
move here
with a business. I think they would, I think Steve would support that they should get the same level of support.
Yeah.
So with that understanding that private development projects doesn't just mean
development.
Vertical construction. It doesn't just mean vertical construction.
Yeah.
So with that.
And one question, just an analogy to help me. Is this similar to when we put in Homeland Security to help all the other agencies talk and get things right? And
certainly. I would say it's almost an ombudsman.
Okay.
Someone to help, maybe not quite that far, but someone to help the communication process, okay?
Yeah.
Because their communication breakdowns,
it
falls down on both ends, you know?
Right.
It falls down,
So
if we can get them moving together and... Right.
Sounds good.
Don't let things sit on desks for too long. Move them forward.
Right. Your Honor, I would suggest that we add the word economic between private and development. Private economic development projects.
As long as staff and the manager know what our goal is.
Yep,
that's fine. Is there a motion to adopt number one as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Number two, provide continuous street lighting along major roadways. I don't remember whose suggestion that was.
I believe it was.
How does that differ from what we're doing already? Example, we're going to widen, we're going to do a Palm Harbor extension. We're going to do an Old Kings Road extension. We're going to add street lighting to those projects as those projects are completed.
Right. That is one of our street lighting program. The other one is in our residential areas, if someone requests, it's on a request basis, for a individual street light at an intersection in our neighborhoods, we will ask FPNL to put one up at those qualified intersections.
But this says provide continuous street lighting along major roadways. This is not residential.
Right.
Roadways.
This is
Palm Coast Parkway, Palm Harbor Parkway, Matanzas Woods Parkway, Seminole Woods Boulevard.
Was this based on a project that we were doing and then stopped?
Well, it was a program. We used to have a third program. And the third program was what we call continuous lighting along those major thoroughfares, where we had an existing four-lane street. Mayor, you just mentioned Palm Coast Parkway. That was part of that program to take street lighting all the way out to US 1 on Palm Coast Parkway, even though it wasn't a major widening all the way out to US 1 because it was already widened. Other good examples of what you mentioned is Belterre North. Belterre North didn't have street lights, but when we widened it to four lanes, we installed the street lights. Belterre South of Palm Coast Parkway, which was already widened to four lanes, does not have street lights. And this program would place Belterre South on a list to actually install street lights on streets that we don't have plans for improvements. So this actually, and Mr. Nobile is correct. We used to have this program, and every year we would fund another street. And then when we were making cuts back during the hard times, we this was a program we actually cut out of the budget. So now we've had a request from the council members to put it back in the budget to see if you want to fund. And the one that was on the list next, you know, we had a priority list, was Belterre South, you know, basically south of Palm Coast Parkway all the way down to State Road 100. So that's what this was all about. Just so everybody knows, FPNL puts the lights up, and so if we ask for decorative lights or LED, then they will charge us some upfront costs. If we ask this for the regulars, they will not ask for upfront costs, but every light they put in, and it is by light, so every time we put one in a neighborhood, they add it to our bill. The benefit of LED is that the amount they add to our bill is less, so as you saw before, after 7 years, it actually is a return on the dollars. So just so you know, this isn't something that you have to, but with LED, it makes sense that you'd have to place dollars in the budget to make this happen.
Your Honor, I'd like to see what those dollars are before I can vote on this.
This would, if you say yes to this, then we would add it to our task to bring to you, back to you at budget time. Once again, as the mayor said, that you know you still have to fund these programs. If you don't vote this, then we won't go out and start doing the research, and we won't add it to our project list because it's not a priority of City Council. So the question, if you want to see the dollars and you want to see a plan, you need to vote yes, and we will put it in our work plan. If you aren't about to fund this and it would just be a waste of our time, then please don't vote for it. So,
personally, rather than saying we're going to have a project and we're going to be sure that we do continuous light on major roadways, I'd rather hear from our traffic engineers, from people of that nature, where are these needed, not where are they desired. We'd love to have continuous lighting, but it is a budget item, and I suspect at budget time we're going to be looking for ways to save money. Rather than making this a major project, I'd rather hear from city staff, traffic engineers, consulting engineers, where is it most needed? How did we pick Belterre South? Well, because it was the next one on the list. But is there another area where public safety is of greater concern?
We've already completed that many years ago when we put this together. First and foremost, the major intersections, we've got a light up. Right. We didn't ask for a request from anybody on those before they went up. Anytime we have a school bus stop and it's at a corner, we always make sure there's a light at that corner. Those were a couple, just as you said, that was determined to be the highest priority. So as you drive down Belterre, you will see some lights at each one of the intersections of Belterre, because the traffic engineers say it's good to light up the intersections. It helps you see where to turn, et cetera. And then the rest of it is this is a, go back to that citizen survey. This is always something that you have a lot of comments. And Belterre, what I've heard, is basically comments from citizens. Now, to be fair, every time we put a light up, we have people that don't like it, too. And it's one of those that, and particularly the continuous lighting, you'll notice there's shields we put up because it's in their backyards. There are many people, and this is where it's kind of an interesting guess, I guess, as to how many people think it's good and how many people think it bad. But very few people are neutral on this issue.
Mr. Mayor, I guess I'm not particularly in favor of this program. First of all, we'll have more light pollution, although the lighting is getting better, and especially with LEDs, you seem to be able to direct it more. You don't just have a long-term cost; you have lifetime costs of the electric bill for them, and just the with the advances in vehicle lighting, I'm just not really sure that it's necessary. This isn't like the old days where, you know, you had those single bulbs. I mean, the headlights on my car move when I, you know, turn the steering wheel. You know, they look around the corner with me. I mean, and with LED lighting, and most cars have LED lighting in them. I mean, I'm just not sure it's really necessary anymore.
But we are going to continue on new construction.
Unless you tell us otherwise, anytime we have new construction, we always incorporate that into the capital and construction cost.
Yeah, my thought is that we continue on the construction, and to the mayor's point, that if it should in an area become a safety issue of some sort, then we look at it.
Okay. I think I'm hearing a consensus that we continue with widening new construction and look at safety issues as a measure.
And that's
rather than to just say we're going to arbitrarily put street lighting on every major roadway. Sometime in the future, it'll happen.
And that is consistent with what we're doing now, so we don't need action from City Council if you want us to just continue our current
leave that
program.
Alone. Agenda item number recommendation number three, capital funding for the Arts Foundation.
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to speak, if I may. The Arts Foundation is not a governmental entity like the community center and the Arts Foundation. I mean, it's magnanimous of the county to say they're going to give us letters of intent, but that's, for those of us that are citizens here, that's our money anyway. The county's making a promise that, well, we'll collect taxes and we'll earmark some of it for them. But as Mr. Carroll rightfully pointed out, the original deal was to give them the land or give it to them on a sweetheart deal because they assured us they could get the construction done. I don't want to see another golf course here in the city, and I've just got a bad feeling about this from the standpoint of publicly funding something that's not a governmental entity.
Any other comments?
Well, I think that Mr. McGuire, what the mayor was talking about were actually state dollars. Not that it really matters; it's still the same thing. I think
there was no such thing as government dollars.
Ultimately, the same thing, right? And I think they're trying to help. They're asking for our help to leverage $450,000 from the state from letters of intent.
Well, I think that we should make our grant writing facilities available to them. I think we should make whatever staff talent that we have, which is considerable, to help them raise their funds, but I'm not interested in asking my taxpayers to fund this.
They've already been able to, I forget the number, Mayor. Can you help me? 200,000? Was that their initial grant? 150,000 that they've already received?
Yeah. I think it was
150,000. So they've received 150,000 grant on their own just by us helping them with securing or giving them a long-term lease. That was one of the criteria they needed. They now are lined up for a larger grant. Regularly, even on my way into this building today, people said there's nothing to do in Palm Coast. Don't necessarily agree, but a well-done arts center does have an economic impact to it as well. When I met with the Arts Foundation last week, I suggested to them that, you know, $150,000 in a single budget year is very difficult to swallow. But broken up over 2 years, with their only if they're able to raise their own portion of the dollars, that I could support that. Now I received the same email as you that said that wouldn't be in this state funding cycle, but the following state funding cycle. So the 2 years I think works automatically right there. I would like to see us move this forward with the understanding that, first of all, they have to raise their portion of it themselves from the private side. They have to have their skin in the game as well, and that until that time, you know, the dollars wouldn't be available to them. If that works within their letter of intent that the state requires, then, you know, I'm comfortable with it. Especially since, Bill, we still own the property, so whatever they build there is ours.
Yeah, that's true, and I applaud your research in this, Jason, but at the end of the day, it's still taking tax money and giving it to something that's not a government function.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you open the door to that. If a professional hockey team, God forbid, wanted to come to Palm Coast, should we give them the money to get their
team? Orlando does.
This point well taken. I love the Arts Foundation. I think they're wonderful people. I think their vision is terrific, but I don't think it's part of the city government, and I don't think we should fund it.
Let me give you my perspective. We already fund, to a very modest amount, art, creative, cultural arts in the city.
Yeah.
I've asked the Arts Foundation, how can... Oh, let's see, City Repertory Theater. How can they make use of your facility when it's built? How can the Art League make use of your facility when it's built? In other words, you've got 10, 12 other non-governmental cultural arts organizations in town eligible for funding. I would like to defer this a little bit until I can see how these other art, cultural arts groups can get on board.
Well, one of the things you'll recall, Mr. Mayor, is that when these groups have come before the city to ask if they could get some of the money that we budget for that, the question is always asked, who else are you talking to? You know, because if you're going to come with your hand out to me every year and you're not trying to get in his pocket, I'm not going to stay interested in you too long.
I'm kind of on the fence with this one, because I'm listening to what everyone has said, and I agree with all of you. And that's a bad spot. So,
well, let's. Were we to do this year, we would have to put a certain amount of money in the budget. We haven't yet seen the details of a budget. I would leave this one in limbo. Let's see how the budget looks. Let's see what the millage rate implications are. Let's communicate with all of the cultural arts groups and see if there's a collaborative way that we can make this happen.
What about if, Mr. Mayor, what about if we change this to say something like, and I think it would go under our probably continued efforts, but to continue to support the arts in Palm Coast, which would give us the opportunity, if we thought it would, if as a group we thought it made sense to fund it in some way, that would give us that flexibility to do that.
I see that as an ongoing. I mean, we're doing that now.
Anyway. Yeah.
I don't think we need to add that.
And that would come up in the budget as to how much if we would want
much
to increase it and so on. But I would like to have a discussion on this. I think I'm with Mr. McGuire. I don't see writing him a check, but there are many ways to skin a cat, you know, and different, you know, to work with them because of the connections and the infrastructure that we have as an organization. We could maybe help them get. I mean, like one of the Mr. McGuire said, I want to see who their private investors are. You know, do you have private? Because so far, all I've heard was city, county, and state. And
they are pledging $150,000 from private as well.
Yeah, but that's only what 10%.
Well,
maybe less than that. Like to see that
for this they are program. For this phase one and phase two.
Yeah. But like I said, there are, like the mayor said, there are ways of working other organizations into not just the funding, but in the use of what comes out of the capital development, which then is government. It's going to be, I think it's going to take a little more discussion, and I'd like to see it, but keep it in the existing.
Keep this as part of our ongoing.
Keep in mind that we took the renovation of the community center out of the budget this year. I think that's, to me, is a higher priority to get done than participating in this.
Agreed. Okay. So I think we've concluded this list.
So to summarize, out of this one, we're basically taking number one with a slight revision. And then, Denise, if you go back one slide, we're going to add that number one to these four, plus the fifth one that you added that was about economic development and a joint presentation with the county to learn more about their efforts and where we're working together and where the gaps are. So we will attach all six of those items to the resolution before we ask the mayor to approve it, or not approve it, but sign it, because you all have already approved it.
Everybody comfortable with that?
I'm good with it.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank
this
you.
Brings us to the consent agenda, items 14 through 18. For the benefit of the public, these are items that the council will act on as a group. However, we always want to provide the opportunity that if any of you wish to speak on any one of these items, 14 through 18, you may do so. Or if you wish council to remove any item from the consent agenda so that it can be discussed independently. Anyone from the public wish to comment on the consent agenda, items 14 through 18? Seeing no one approach the podium, we close the public portion meeting. Go back to council. Is there a motion on the consent agenda, items 14 through 18?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for anyone to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Lois McCarthy, Palm Coast. I have one major thing, and I wrote it down. The Landing Senior Apartments in Palm Coast Town Center has no street name. Why? That's my question. Why it doesn't have a street name? Somebody called me up and asked me about it, and I drove by there just to see for myself. It doesn't have a street name. And the second thing is, how is the wear at Pine Lakes? How is that coming? Okay, that's
we
it.
We get your answer.
Thank
on
you.
Both of those. Next speaker.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, prior to my presentation, I'd like to commend the EMS people as being recent recipients of their services, my wife and myself. You have no idea how professional and compassionate they are and worthy of every citizen's admiration and respect. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The subject I'd like to cover this morning is the charter. I did ask Mr. McGuire for some extra time, and we'll go from there. As usual, Mayor, my comments are not directed to any member of the council or to staff. It was recently stated that I was a member of the Charter Commission. I was not. I was a member of the Home Rule Coalition, a group dedicated to incorporating the Palm Coast Service District. A brief history. After heavy pressure from our group, the Home Rule, the Flagler County Commissioners should be given credit because they authorized an independent incorporation study. Daytona Beach Community College was chosen to produce the feasibility study and charter. Ms. Lois Westcott was the project leader. It might sound a little bit funny to you, but many of the charter meetings that were held to inform citizens and to vote on charter content, for example, did we want a strong mayor, weak mayor, did we want a mayor council, did we want this or that, was accomplished by a show of hands, and majority ruled. In November of 1998, the feasibility study and charter were presented to county commissioners and subsequently was approved by the state. November 1999, Palm Coast Incorporated. There were 18,938 registered voters, 11,000 or 58% voted, 6,500 for incorporation, 4,500 against. The charter does provide for review no sooner than 10 years via a charter review committee appointed by the council and mayor. A question has arisen as to whether or not the charter should now be reviewed. Per the charter, registered city voters have the power to petition the council to to propose an ordinance or to require reconsideration of an adopted ordinance or to propose a charter amendment. 25% of the voters are needed to commence a petition. Based on the current number of registered voters, 56,543 would require 14,135 signatures, a daunting task. Should the charter be reviewed and amended at this time? Prior to answering this question, let's examine whether the effort and dollars expended since incorporation has brought Palm Coast to its fullest potential. In my opinion, it has not. Why? We have incurred large dollar expenditures for projects such as Bulldog Drive, other roads, tennis courts, failing golf courses, red light cameras, City Hall, and have not concentrated on eliminating fully or rectifying perennial infrastructure problems such as swales, flooding, and overgrown vacant lots in high-density housing areas. Other areas of economic concern are where is our downtown? Where are the major corporations? Where are the jobs other than entry-level service industry jobs? Yes, I know, we have 67 counties to contend with, but Mr. still.
Liguori, let me stop you for 1 minute. He suggested that you were going to offer
2 minutes.
2 minutes additional. All right,
okay.
Thank you.
Entry-level service industry jobs. But the question remains, why is Palm Coast incurring a high degree of disappointments? The town center, loss of Books a Million, City Marketplace, Roma Court, European Village, Walmart, Old Kings Road, and numerous strip mall store closings. Could it be the difference versus county and other bickerings? The old saying was, when we incorporated, when we hit 50,000 people, they will come. Now that we have 78,000, they are leaving. Admittedly, excellent progress has been made in many city administrative areas. What contributes to the problems and disappointments cited? I believe it is maintaining the status quo mentality and citizens who do not vote. A commissioner recently, and I quote, stated, "I love new businesses that are transparent and create no traffic." Really? Imagine our corporate CEOs react to this. "I believe we must review the charter now in order to address priorities and advance Palm Coast's direction and future. To this end, I propose two amendments. One, that we reduce the 25% requirement to 10% in line with state law. This would only require 5,600 signatures. Secondly, due to the tremendous increase in registered voters from 18,000 to 56,000, I propose that the council be expanded to 6 members." This will
15 seconds.
This will allow constituents to improve consensus and improve consensus on all vital matters. I submit these thoughts for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. As far as Florida Park Drive and construction traffic, doesn't have to go through any residential neighborhood. There is a intersection of Palm Coast Drive, Palm Coast Parkway, and Palm Harbor Parkway. Why not use that intersection? Doesn't have to go through any residential neighborhood. And it just really bothers me because with 8,000 cars per day and 528 trucks per day, it is hurting the health of the residents on Florida Park Drive. And we need some protection. We need the city to do something about it. The city has a policy 3.3.5.2. "The city shall develop neighborhood compatibility criteria, which shall be utilized by the city to review applications for future land use map amendments, rezoning, and special exceptions to ensure that proposed land use and development do not adversely impact existing residential neighborhood areas." Well, when Florida Park Drive was changed to a major road, how can you not say that that didn't have an adverse impact upon the residents? It did. So do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Hi, Mary Hampton, Palm Coast. I'd like to build off what Vince was talking about the charter. I didn't realize we hadn't reviewed our long-term goals in such a long time. I worked in an international corporation out of Chicago. I'm an engineer, and I was in high management. And we had our short-term, we had zero-based budgeting, which means I don't think any of you might be here right now, zero-based budgeting, after that survey that I saw last night. And the short-term and long-term five-year goals were mandatory. Someone needs to look at this. And I know that the mayor said we were a retirement community. We have all these kids in school here. 75% of them are Section 8 families, I believe. Well, when I go to the stores, I'm standing behind EBT cards. So these are the people who are moving in. And that's why the stores are moving out. We don't have any economic development. Going south to Volusia, going north to St. John's, which is first in everything, not just the schools, but first in economic development, we have nothing here. I've watched this garbage today of presentations, a survey that we don't even do, somebody else does for us. We have nothing in Palm Coast in comparison to St. John's County. Somebody needs to do something. Maybe the charter is a start.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Jack Kyle, Palm Coast. I got a couple of things, but the first one is, you pay a corporation, a company, to mow all the lawns, and you give them money. They come, they mow all the city property. Now, I mow city property, so I should get paid the way they get paid. But that's beside the point. Now, the city charter, right? Mr. Nobile, you made a few comments at the workshop. You said people want it. Well, I don't see the people. Now, when somebody wants something, they come in with the orange shirts, the green shirts, the blue shirts, and they ask for it. Now, you're telling me that you're saying that the people want it. But I don't hear the people. I don't see the people. You know, you got two people that have come up, they talked about, that's out of 56,000 people. It just gets to me that you're saying people, but you're not saying anything. You're saying they want to change, but you're not telling us what they change. Yeah, you're just saying, well, they people, the people and the people. I'm part of the people, and I don't see anything where the one change I would prefer is more city council members. You know, instead of 5-7. That's one. But you're saying people want it, and you're not telling us what they want. Nobody is telling you. You're saying you took up a lot of time, I'll tell you that. No, but I want to hear specifics. If you tell me that the people want a change, I want to know what the change they want is. If you tell me that it's the people, I don't see them. You see two people out of 53,000. That's not a majority. That's not the people that's saying they want. If they want it, they want it badly enough, let them come up here and speak. Never mind writing in the newspapers and what. Let's see a face and let's see somebody say, come up, and this is what I want.
Thank you. Next speaker.
My name is Celia Buglisi. Hi.
Pull it down.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My name is Celia Buglisi. I save a lot in clothing for being short, at least that. Okay. First of all, I want to say publicly that services that the city give us are very good, like code enforcement. Oh my God, what would be without code enforcement if they were not helping keep Palm Coast beautiful? I moved here in 1991, And I've seen before the city and after when we decided by overwhelming majority to become a city. I do agree with some of my community neighbors, whatever, taxpayers, that probably our city charter has to be reviewed. It's been a long time. For example, there is one thing which I don't know if it's looking to the city charter, but it's been eating my heart out since we became a city. And every time I question about this, they always said, well, that's in the charter. Okay, I am a City of Palm Coast taxpayer, and as well, I own a little property in Volusia County. It is a little apartment. I bought it because I didn't know where to put extra money that I saved in my life, so I'm going to put it in real estate. I am shocked that my taxes in Volusia County on that little apartment, I paid this year to the county $172. I paid to the city of Daytona Beach, where my apartment is, $173. My tax bill in Palm Coast, and I was really shocked by that since the very beginning. My house in Palm Coast pays $1,016 to the county, plus total 72 when you add the lines for the bonds that we are paying for those buildings in 100, it's 1,072 total to the county. When I pay to the city of Palm Coast, $541. The city of Palm Coast gives me the roads, gives me all the services, and we also pay our sheriff department additional, what is, $2-3 million? Is it true, your expertise, Mr. Landon, that this has to do with our charter? It's been eating my heart out because we are the biggest city in this county. And is the county, what services the county give me? The tax collector, the clerk of court, the justice center, the SOE, the appraiser. But who gives me my part of my law enforcement? We pay additional several million dollars to sheriff. How much do we pay to the sheriff? $2-3 million a year?
2.6.
So why do we pay so much to the county? What do we get? Maybe 20% of our services from the county, maybe 30% of our services from the county, and the city is footing our roadways, our infrastructure, our
15 seconds.
Our everything, and we need some change into that. One other thing that I say, there are good things this council did right now. Arts, the arts, whatever foundation. I agree. Common sense. Let's wait. Let's see what we can get. It's taxpayers' money. It's expensive.
You.
May I just one? I don't come here very often. I have something else.
Councilmember, do you have an additional 30 seconds?
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Okay. If we look at the city charter, it's beautiful. It tells us everything. Who does what for whom, and who is under which orders. And here, the city of Palm, here, the residents, we are on top. We are on top. But, you know, city does a lot of good things for us. And I'm telling you, we have a heck of a great manager when it comes about knowledge. Mr. Landon, I'm telling you, it's much better what we than what we had before. And you do a lot of good things. But when you approve my city hall over there against the referendum, I think if we make a change here, that might not be able to be done again. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to travel there because the city of Palm Coast, main thoroughfare, is here. We started here. It's Palm Coast Parkway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Steve Wolf, Palm Coast B section. Good morning. I respect the job you're all doing. I don't covet any such position where you sit and take slings and arrows and at the same time try your best to perform the duties. I appreciate the vision that you have for Palm Coast, and I'm sitting in traffic now watching some of the efforts you're making to respond to growth and promote more growth. I appreciate that. As far as a charter review is concerned, I have a little bit different take. I think it's part of a healthy governmental practice to expose the charter to public review on a periodic basis, and I think that's what the charter meant when it included a timetable and actually made an imperative that the first one be done at some point after the first 10 years of incorporation, and then suggested a timetable of 10 years thereafter. There's a new generation coming along that will inherit the city, and I think that when the city government opens the charter to review, it is saying, please, you're welcome to come up here and be a part of this and suggest any changes that you think might be necessary to be part of leadership and the crafters of the new vision for the city after you're all gone. I didn't read enough to find out how many cities in the nation do this or how often, but I think it's still government of for and by the people, and that the charter did seem to put the people in that kind of perspective. So this very proactive city council, I think, could add that feather to its cap of accomplishments. Those caps are running out of room rapidly because you've got a lot of feathers already. But I think this is the city council that is proactive enough to do that and is strong enough to withstand whatever may be suggested. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Carol Mercola. My comments, again, are about the charter. I did not attend the prior meeting where it was discussed, but I did read descriptions of it in the Palm Coast Observer and on Flagler Live, and they weren't pretty. There's nothing wrong with asking for a charter review. Absolutely nothing wrong. Mr. Nabil asked for that. There's also nothing wrong with the mayor and council asking questions. However, I would have expected that any council member bringing this up would have done some research on the topic and would have been willing and able to respond to other council members without getting agitated. The point seemingly being made by Councilman Nobile was that the decision to have a charter committee and whether that committee's recommendations should be adopted should not be the decision of the mayor and council, because that leaves the people out of the process. This view represents a fundamental lack of understanding about representative government, in my opinion. Additionally, Councilman Nobile gave the impression a charter review is a big issue among his constituents. Yet, from his first day in office up until that meeting last week, he had not received or sent one email from anyone about the city charter. Councilman DiLorenzo said that he, too, had never had a resident raise the issue of the city's charter. He said, I quote, this is from the newspaper, so it wasn't here, I think it's a special interest group issue. And in my opinion, you hit the nail on the head. The Tea Party and their sent their members an email stating, Steve Nobile, our member and city councilman from Palm Coast, needs help. He has asked for any members that can attend this meeting today to do so. He needs citizens who believe in a city charter review to come and express that opinion to the rest of the council. That's fine. But if this is such a hot issue for the public, why do we have to solicit people to come and make comments? This call to action was from the Tea Party member, Michael McElroy, who was also president of the Ronald Reagan Republican Assembly, and I think many of you know about that, those two groups. Councilman Nobile is also a member of these special interest groups, which have their own agenda. And you have every right to your membership. That is not the issue. But I think that your refusal to provide an example of a specific change or to answer questions from the mayor and the council should raise additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, George Mayo, Palm Coast. Yesterday's Flagler County Commissioners meeting, two of the resolutions they passed, one was in support of a moratorium of Senate Bill S-1171 by Senator Bill Nelson, moratorium against seismic sounding and oil drilling off our East Coast. And also they passed a moratorium against fracking, allowing fracking here in Florida, which could cause a major problem. And so I would ask you to consider in a workshop discussing these matters and coming out in support and sending your support to both Bill Nelson and to Tallahassee for our representatives, knowing that we do not support fracking. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. Come back to council, but first let me see if I can answer some of the questions that were raised. The Landing Senior Apartments don't have a street name.
May not have a street name sign up yet. It just recently opened up, but it is Landing Boulevard. You'll actually see Landing Boulevard on State Road 100, where the signal is, and that goes all the way up to that to Town Center, Central Avenue. So we need to
worthy of a street sign up there.
We need to get a street sign placed there at the circle so that when you get there, you know where you're going. Well, I'm not sure if that's us or the Community Development District, but we'll...
It's one more little project for you to work on.
We'll make it happen.
Progress report on the Pine Lakes Weir.
It was on the consent agenda to for Klein Construction to start... or sign the contract. They have assured us, and we have a representative in the audience today, that they are ready to go, and staff and Klein has been working to make sure as soon as City Council approved this that we would get started as soon as possible. So within at least the next 30 days, I'm confident you'll see work out there.
Comment from staff?
We turn dirt tomorrow morning. We'll be done within 90 days. We're substantially
Come on, Hap, you can do it in 60, can't you?
Okay. Thank you. A couple questions for the city attorney. One of the speakers, and this is the second person that I've heard in the history of this discussion, talk about proposed charter amendments. The first suggestion was to reduce the number from 25% to 10% to be in accord with state statute. You, Mr. Reichman, suggested at the workshop that the state statute takes precedence over the charter language of 25%, and yet both in two of the media where it's been reported, they suggested that 25% was the prevailing number.
Well, I think you have to look at our charter and you have to compare it against
you
Chapter
1. You have to define for me what notwithstanding means.
Okay, fair enough.
That's lawyer language.
You've got our charter, which says that for charter amendments, and this is in Section 10, says that the charter may be amended in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 166. So it recognizes that the two have to work hand in glove. Then Section 10.3 says that for initiative and referendum, it says that at least 25% of the qualified electorate shall have the power to petition the council to propose an ordinance. 25% of the qualified electorate have the power to petition the council to require reconsideration of an adopted ordinance, and at least 25% of the qualified electorate shall have the power to propose an amendment to the charter. So in 1999, the folks that, or whenever it was, that did this felt that it was appropriate for 25% of the electorate be required to get together to do those three things. But the charter also says that with regard to charter amendments, you have to look at Chapter 166. Chapter 166 is very clear. It says that municipality may amend its charter pursuant to this section, notwithstanding any charter provisions to the contrary. So if you look at 10.3, it says that it requires 25%. 166 says that the governing body of municipality may by ordinance, or the electors of a municipality may by petition signed by 10% of the registered electors submit to electors a proposed amendment to the charter. It is my legal opinion that when you compare 166 in Section 10 of our charter that read together the only reasonable construction of our of this language in our charter is that for purposes of proposing an ordinance or requiring reconsideration of adopted ordinance, that's fine, 25%. But for purposes of adoption of an amendment or consideration of amendment, 166.031 subsections 1 and 3 can only be read with our charter to require 10%.
So what you're saying
amendment to the charter. Yeah.
So what you're saying is the current charter is out of line with Florida statutes and should probably be reviewed to correct these differences, incorrect statements. I mean, because what we have is a charter where the newspaper and the media think it's 25%, but in truth, it's 10%. Is that true or not, Mr. Reichman?
I didn't say that is my legal opinion that the charter needs to be reviewed.
No. I didn't know, and that's what I'm meaning, that it's 10%, not 25%.
It's definitely 10%.
Okay, so but the people in Palm Coast are being misled by reading the charter and by our current media who read the charter. So a charter review seems in line that in 1999 when the charter was created, it's very possible that that the Florida statute might not have either been there or may have been at 25%. And somewhere in the last 15, 16 years, that's changed. So it's only a good idea to change the charter to match that.
Well, you haven't, just to the narrow legal point, Council Member, Section 10.1, to address your concerns about the need for amendment, specifically says this charter may be amended in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 166, as the same may be amended from time to time. So there was a recognition in 1999 the process for amendment of this charter would be consistent with 166, as 166 may be would be changed. And to the extent that 166 subsection 0313, subsection 1, was amended since 1999 to add a provision for 10%, arguably that was contemplated by the language that I just read in section 10.1. I don't mean to get into
argument. And I just want to know the legal perspective from
you. It's 10%.
It's 10%, and it's probably a good idea that our charter says that, I believe. And I think
those are two separate statements.
Right.
Okay. The second suggestion that the citizen offered was that perhaps it's time to go to a 6-member council and mayor for 7. I'm curious about the procedural ways that you would do that and the impacts that it would have on our city. Let me suggest my concerns. If you were to, and you'd have to tell me what the sequencing is, but let's suppose there was a charter amendment to convert to a 6+1. You would then have to create a redistricting committee, I would believe, to draw the boundaries for these new districts. We have gone through 2 redistrictings in Palm Coast since we incorporated. And one of the concerns that was raised was the possibility of taking an existing council member who was elected by the residents being boundaried out of his district and therefore losing his or her seat. So to say that you want to go to 6+1, there's a cost associated with redistricting, and there's the very real risk of displacing existing seating council members. Is that a fair statement? And then the question I have, you would have to amend the charter, and then immediately thereafter you would have to do this redistricting committee, and then you would have to have a new election. Is that correct?
Well, a couple comments and observations.
I'm just trying to look at the implications of this.
Any time, and this is, and as I mentioned in the workshop, I've been through this process for different cities over the course of my experience. And the one very clear thing that I've experienced and I've learned is that you have to look at the entire, if you change one word, if you change one sentence, if you change one section in your charter, you've got to see how that affects everything else in your charter and how it interplays with the ordinances that you have on the books so that you can see and look for the unintended consequences. Now, not getting into the pros and cons of whether, you know, 5 is a great number or 7 or 6 plus 1, as you indicated, Mr. Mayor, I will tell you that it's been my experience that, as you just said, again, this is just my experience, that when you redistrict in any way, whether you go from 5 council members that are elected citywide to a 4 and 1 that are districts and then 1 citywide, there is very frequently the intended or unintended consequence is that people are no longer going to qualify for the seat that they currently sit in. Now, that's a more of a political issue than a legal issue. But you asked me, in my experience, is that a consequence? It is very common that is a consequence for whatever benefit or consideration that council wants to take that in.
Another speaker talked about a need to revise the charter in terms of long-term goals. Let me suggest to you that is not part and parcel of the charter. The charter gives you the mechanism by which you operate. The issue of goals are established by those individuals elected by the residents to serve in this representative form of government. We spent quite a bit of time talking about long-term goals today. Changing the charter does not change your long-term goals. Changing your elected officials might.
Mayor, if I could give the analogy, it would be like a corporation and the structure of the corporation, the articles that incorporate it and how that corporation operates for those in the private sector versus then once you have that incorporation and you have that structure, whether it's board of directors or whatever, then those board of directors set the goals. And long-term goals is not part of the charter, but it's that how it's incorporated because we are a municipal corporation, and this is basically our articles incorporation. It's different. Thought I'd just try to help.
Another speaker talked about the relationship, I hope I'm going to paraphrase this correctly, between taxes paid to the city, taxes paid to the county, and is this a charter issue? It's not a charter issue at all. In fact, the county is a non-charter county, so they operate under the auspices of the state constitution. They are a taxing authority. They levy taxes, and they present a budget just as we do, and every resident has the opportunity to go down there and tell them it's way too much or it's not enough or it's just right. Three little bears. So the same thing happens in the city. We have spent quite a bit of time today talking about what we want to do, what our vision is, how we're going to implement that, and what the implications for taxes are. This council and previous councils in recent years have been very reluctant to raise taxes. In fact, we've gone in the other direction to the extent possible. But it's not a charter issue. It's a elected officials. The process is, whether it be a county, whether it be a city, you create a budget. You divide the budget amount by the property values, and that's the tax rate. Now, quite frankly, some governments do it the other way around. They say, here's my desired tax rate, here's my population, here's my property values. That generates X amount of dollars. Now let's back into a budget that meets that amount. But taxes or the relative distribution of taxes is not an issue for the charter. Another speaker talked about the timetable for the charter review. Just correct me if I'm wrong, but the language is permissive. It said you could not do a charter review for the first 10 years. You may do a charter review every 10 years thereafter. It's permissive language, not obligatory. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, that's correct. That timetable is set forth under the charter review committee. And so the way I interpret it is that if you're going to have the process of a charter review committee, that cannot be done any sooner than 10 years from the creation of the city, and thereafter may be done every 10 years.
Now, a question to Mr. Nobile's point. The first city charter had a significant glitch in it. And we did a Scrivener's error correction in the charter. The first city charter, as it was written, and nobody seemed to understand the implications, was it said that if there are two or more candidates for an office, there will be a primary. What it meant to say, I believe, was that there are three or more candidates. But the charter said two or more. And as a consequence, when I ran for city council way back when, there were only two of us running, myself and existing Councilman Jerry Full, but there were two of us, and we had a primary.
Oh, Joe Canane?
No, there was only two at that time, and there had to be a primary, and the results are what they are. So we made a Scrivener's error. We did not do a charter amendment. We corrected in the sense of a Scrivener's error. Could you do a similar thing with this 25%, 10% issue?
No, sir. I think it would be necessary to go ahead and propose and do that as a charter amendment. I do not believe that. Now, my understanding, I have not gone back and looked at the history of the creation of that specific language, but I would have to assume that it was intended in 1999, Mr. Mayor, that it be 25%. So to change that to 10%, I think it would be necessary. Now, But I want to add, the review that we're talking about is under a separate section of Section 10 of our charter. And that's where it says charter review and charter review committee. If you wanted to correct the 25%, you could do that. When I say you, I mean the city could do that through Section 1, which is, says that the charter may be amended in accordance with the provisions of municipal powers, Home Rule Powers Act, which is by an ordinance, which would then call for an election, just like this council did several years ago when we went from odd-numbered elections to even-year elections. Correct. And that was done under 163.031 and Section 10 of our charter without the necessity of a charter review. So charter review really is a different – it's an additional option.
Correct.
For consideration of changes to your charter.
Fine, thank you. And the last, and I would ask that this be on our workshop, the issue of supporting opposition. That all sounds like a double negative. For coastal drilling and fracking, I think that's something City Council ought to address, and depending on what we come up with, ought to respond.
Mayor, then, if you all are in agreement, then we'll get with the – I know the county had resolutions – We'll put those on your workshop so you'll have something you can review and look at.
That's fine. That'd be great.
And then there was one other earlier about Palm Coast Parkway construction.
Yes.
I can address one of the two. The dead lane, the left turn lane that was killed a while back by Bells, yes, that's going to come out, and that's going to be part of the median, and that's all going to be corrected when they start working on the median. The resident that expressed a concern about the safety, I honestly didn't follow it, and it looks like Carl just left. But, Steve, if you'll get together with the gentleman so that he can explain exactly where it is and make sure our construction people address it. If we got a safety issue out there, we need to address it.
Thank you. This brings us to discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. Vice Mayor, why don't we start with you?
Nothing to offer, Your Honor.
Mr. Mobile.
A couple of things. First statement. A friend of mine and fellow biker was killed this weekend in a car accident. And apparently...
In a bicycle car?
No, a motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
Motorcycle and car.
Bike, right?
Is that the one on Bimini Bar?
Yes. And his name was Adam Rayon. And I really just want to make this one statement public. When you're in your car and your car is moving, put down your phone. You don't need to be texting and... talking. I mean, that's apparently, I'm not 100% on the facts, but somebody was looking at their phone, the motorcycle stopped to make a left-hand turn, and was plowed. And that was a friend of mine. And
We just need to stop that. Also, since my name was brought up a lot today, I'm finally feeling like I'm a politician. I haven't been spoken about.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know, but you know, I'm part of the club.
If I can interrupt you for just one second, yeah. I just want to say that I thought you were being passionate about your.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Not but I'm Italian, so that sometimes.
Maybe that's why.
There's a line there. When you come to my house, you think everybody's fighting, but it's really just a conversation. But I just when I talk to people, I don't ask them what member of what club they are. I don't ask them if they're Democrat. I don't ask them if they're Republican. I talk to everyone. Everyone comes to me. They have my ear, and I will bring what they say here, regardless of what anyone thinks of who that particular particular electorate is, how they feel about them. I mean, there's a lot of people, it would be like me saying, well, if you're Democrat, because I'm a Republican, I'm really not going to listen to you because I don't like your, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to represent all of Palm Coast. So that's one point. Second point is, Jack, I'm getting your phone number because all the phone calls I get, I'm forwarding to you. so you can hear what I hear. But as to whether or not people can come here, one suggestion I would make is in meetings, which are business meetings where people can speak, we have to move them off at 9 o'clock in the morning because people I know can't come here. I know of right now two people who are here who took the day off from work to come here. That's not right. So we can't ask them to be here but not give them the opportunity because we're not going to be talking about this at the next business meeting, I hope. And so, we have to let people, there was a comment of this is a representative form of government, and that's true. So when they come to me, I represent them. But I still do not understand the reluctance of allowing for what a very large majority of cities already do on a regular basis, which is a charter review, done by the residents of that particular city. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. DeLorenzo.
No.
Just a comment on why, in my opinion, we have a 9 a.m. meeting and a 6:30 p.m. meeting. I have, in the course of my years serving on city council and as mayor, I have conducted more citizen forums, whatever you want to call them, than any other elected official in this county. And time and time and time again, I had people say, I'd love to come to your meeting, but I don't feel comfortable driving after dark. I think this was a compromise. Observation, any ordinance that is passed has to be read at two meetings. One would be a daytime, one would be an evening, or vice versa. To your point, people who can't make the meetings. A workshop ago, one of our council members was criticized by a member of the public for not talking with her constituents. Mm. And I made the comment at the time, that is absolutely what we're supposed to do. That is the best possible thing we can do. Yep. So for those who can't attend our meetings, absolutely talk to your not only your district council member, because we do represent the entire, we are elected at large, we represent the entire city. Talk to all five elected people and make your position known. And that's something that we should ask for and not be offended when it happens. Right. That's part of what the job description is.
And if I may, Mr. Mayor, that was my point, is we either have to move that or let me, when I say this is what they're telling me,
absolutely
accept it.
Absolutely.
Because that's what they're telling me.
I will support you to the death. Your job is to bring your constituents.
Thank you.
When you then act on it, you must act on what is good for the entire city, not just a small group. But anyway,
enough on that. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing further, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda. You've got 7 minutes at worst.
How about closer to 7 seconds? Just a reminder that next Monday is Memorial Day. City offices, other than essential services, will be closed. And 8 o'clock at Heroes Park is our annual Memorial Day ceremony. And there's a number of other ceremonies.
County has one at 10 o'clock.
And I think Flagler Beach has some. And we have an event at the pool. There's all sorts of activities out there. So good day to celebrate.
And for those of you who worked up an appetite, Food Truck Tuesday is tonight at Town Center from 5 to 8.
That's all I have,
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.